This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com. Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So Chris O'Brien is getting used to his new home in upstate New York on a mountaintop. I don't know what kind of internet connection he has, and we'll have to be testing that once he gets used to things. Curtis Collins has been gracious enough to be the guest co-host, and our main guest this week is none other than Jerome Clark. And I thought of him not too long ago when we had David Halperin on the show, because we were all amongst this group, the original teen UFO researchers. Those were the days. Do you remember them, Jerry, or have those memories gone away?
Oh, no. No, I remember them. Who could forget them? I mean, that was... Here we still are. They must have made an impression on us.
Either that or it caused a mental illness from which we cannot recover.
Oh, we're just creatures of habit.
Something like that. So posted on UFO updates on Facebook by our old friend Chris Rutkowski is a copy of an issue, a cover release of an issue from Saucer News, dated June 1965. And the reason I mention this also is because in the subtitle it says incorporating the UFO Reporter, which was my magazine that I merged with Saucer News, or at least gave them the pleasure of taking it over, in exchange for which I had a staff position on Saucer News as its managing editor. So I guess I was complicit in some of the things he did then. Well, not all of the things. But I'm sure you remember those days, Jerry. I'll give you the headline of this particular issue. Is NICAP an Air Force front? Now, I don't know if we've ever said this before. Jim and I designed that headline together, working in concert.
Well, you and Jim were good at stirring the pot. I think that's basically the beginning and end of Jim's interest in UFOs. I remember in 1959 there was an article using the term loosely, I think by Michael Mann in Saucer News, that was an expose of Donald Keyhoe, who of course was NICAP's most famous director. And he used completely out of context quotes to make Keyhoe look like some kind of... It wasn't clear whether he was supposed to be a dope or a charlatan, but anybody who'd read Keyhoe's books knew what Mann was up to, and Mann knew very well what he was up to as well. But it certainly stirred the pot.
Now, some people might think that Michael G. Mann was one of Jim's pseudonyms or something, but yes, there was indeed a Michael Mann, no relationship to the movie director.
Or the environmental scientist.
That's true. That's right. I shouldn't forget that. He came from Brooklyn, New York. He was a big sci-fi fan. He was also good at making fake tape recordings. He was pretty good at the editing tape, an editing block, and would use like a razor blade to cut recorded tapes apart and change words. I can do it much better now digitally, but Michael was pretty good at it. So, yes, he was a real character in those days.
Yeah. Yeah, I read upon that Keyhoe article when I was working on the UFO Encyclopedia in the 1990s, and I did remember it, but reading it again was quite an experience. It was quite shameless, but it was funny in its own kind of deranged way.
When Jim had a target, his friends would rally around him and join. And this is what happened there. Now, the reason this story is NICAP and Air Force Front came about It's because of what happened due to my association with Jim Ousley, where one day I'd gone to NICAP's headquarters. I'd been there before. I met Major Kehoe, and he was not around often, as you well know, Jerry, but I talked to Richard Hall, and we seemed to get along okay. I returned with some friends, including Alan Greenfield, Rick Hilberg, and maybe one or two others. And as soon as I was seen, once he opened the door at the office of NICAP, he pointed his finger at me, shaking in anger, "You're not welcome here." Never figured out why, except at that point, it was known that I was working with Jim Ousley very closely at Saucer News as the managing editor, which meant I'd sometimes even write Jim's editorials for him or take his ideas and extend them. I helped him put together the magazine for as long as I worked there. The following year, I got a real job as a radio broadcaster. But this was fun. It was a nice way to get my head around developing my writing style and all that stuff. So I can't say it was a bad experience. And Jim could be a barrel of laughs, unless you wanted to do serious UFO research. But I'll tell you one more story before we go on. In those years, there was a UFO sighting at Wanakee Reservoir in New Jersey. And Jim Ousley was obviously not averse to creating hoaxes. So one day he calls the police at Wanakee, and he creates a fake sighting. And I'm listening to him from the other room and laughing, not too loudly because we didn't want to be heard on the phone. And then not long thereafter, there was a real sighting at Wanakee. And I remember going out to the reservoir there one evening with Jim and his other friends, and I had never been so cold. I was just shivering, and probably because I didn't take a warm enough jacket. That's all I remember. It was very cold. That was it. But in this case, what? Art became reality, or the hoax became reality, or he created something? That was weird.
Yeah, that does sound strange.
About the headline, though, I wanted to ask, their Project Blue Book at one time was I don't know if it was ever regarded too highly as being legitimate, but with NICAP, and this has happened with other organizations, and we're seeing this now with MUFON and some others, because of their inability to provide answers, people are wondering, are they in on it? Are they part of the cover-up? I mean, it's almost like the movie Backdraft, where one of the firemen was setting the fires. You know, he was a suspect. So, since you can't solve the problem, you must be causing the problem. So, what's your observation on the psychology of that, that the audience turning on the, well, I don't know if we call it authority figure, but what's your take on that?
Well, that's, the paranoid style, which, it shows up just about in all aspects of American life. Conspiracy theories and paranoia about things. I really have come to see the UFO groups as so incredibly marginal that they loom large in our lives, of course, because we were part of them, or we were at least aware of them. We read their publications. We knew people who belonged to them if we didn't ourselves. But they really had virtually no effect on larger society, including social views of UFOs. I think that views about UFOs and opinions about UFOs were actually shaped by sightings, which, existed even if there had never been any UFO groups. There would have been sightings. They would have gotten into newspapers from time to time. And I'm just really amazed at how, for all these UFO groups loomed large in our lives, really nobody else knew anything about them. UFO groups were always, getting themselves in a state about, oh, this or that misdeed by somebody in some UFO group set ufology back 10 years. No, it didn't, because nobody knew anything about ufology. Nobody in elite media could even name a single organization or a single member, single director of any of these groups.
We'll go into more of the state of UFO research, I guess, and the impact of UFO organizations on the other side. Jerry Clark is our guest. The guest co-host is Kurt Collins. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
If you owe money to the IRS, you need to hear this. The IRS is cracking down on those who owe back taxes. It starts with a devastating letter, and if you don't act immediately, you could find yourself having your wages garnished or have a lien placed on your property. But there's a solution. Tax 10,000 can help. Avoid enforced compliance, where these holds on your income and seizure of your home could become a nightmare that just won't end. Call 800-239-9957 now and speak to one of our experts. 800-239-9957 is the number to link you directly to a tax resolution specialist who will negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Working through the IRS Fresh Start program, all the forms will be handled for you. All you have to do is make the toll-free call. 800-239-9957. Find out if you qualify and possibly save yourself thousands of dollars, not to mention a lot of headaches. It could be the best call you've made today. That number again, 800-239-9957. The service does not provide tax settlement or legal services. We will refer you to a company that does provide such services. Often the IRS will not agree to any reduction in the amount owed. Not all taxpayers who owe more than $10,000 will qualify for a tax reduction program.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting, providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com. Virtual care anywhere.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Chris O'Brien is recovering from his cross-country trip from Arizona, Cottonwood, Arizona, to somewhere in the wilds of New York State overlooking the Pennsylvania border on a mountaintop. I start to think of the Davy Crockett song from the 1950s in Disney, Born on a Mountain, but that was Tennessee, so it doesn't work that way. So we're talking about impact of UFO research organizations and also scandals involving UFO organizations. And I kind of like to think is that in terms of these scandals, again, most people don't know about them. And when we find something pretty genuine, like Phil Imbrogno was a complete faker. His claims of having a doctorate from Harvard, not true. His educational claims, not true. Lots of things about his life were fake. And we wonder here then whether anything in the books he wrote or co-wrote with other people were fake. That, I guess, people sort of know, or maybe a few dozen people know. You know, there have been complaints about me because I've had financial difficulties. Of course, anyone else who puts up a donation link somewhere, they don't complain about them. But, you know, a couple of dozen people got whacked out about me. But I think most people don't care and most people don't know. It's not the business of anybody, but you get the point here. When I was working with AOL, then called America Online, as a forum leader, the people who hated AOL, the elitists, shall we say, on the internet, hated me and attacked me wherever they could. You get this small group of people who are worried about it, and of course we worry here about the follies at MUFON. You know, state directors leaving, all sorts of complaints, whether they've done anything. At large, for the public at large, they don't know, they don't care. They have important things to do.
Yeah, also I think there's this sort of sense that people who are interested in UFOs, there's a stereotype that they're really unusual and they're whacked out people, and anything that goes on among them is really unusual and on the margins of human behavior. When in fact, in my long experience, and yours is long too, Gene, ufologists and UFO people are very ordinary people. There just isn't anything unusual about them or anything that goes on in ufology that doesn't go on in any other human endeavor. Interests might be a little eccentric, a little unordinary. Then the ones that aren't ordinary, well, you're always going to find somebody who's kind of whacked out in any enterprise. I've just been struck as I've gotten older and looked back on all the things that I witnessed and experienced and wrote about that it was all pretty normal human behavior, but just an unusual subject. It was sightings that affected public attitudes. The sightings were always primary. People knew about sightings. They rejected them, or they were puzzled by them, or they thought they meant something. But their opinions were not formed by UFO groups.
Well, the thing here is that nobody in the UFO field is really famous enough for people to be concerned about, except a small number. You know, if you're really into the nitty-gritty and getting into the weeds, you might care who John Ventre is from MUFON and this crazy thing he wrote on Facebook. Any of these issues, 99.999% of those interested in UFOs. And most people who are members of organizations don't know, don't care. It's not part of their lives. Again, if these people were famous, really famous, and they were in the headlines, you care about them, not because of anything they did, but because they were famous, even only for the sake of being famous. Otherwise, yeah, they just don't care.
I think probably in America there have been only two modestly famous ufologists. One was Donald Keyhoe, who was quite visible in the 1950s, and then Alan Hynek for a few years in the late 70s, the early 80s. I knew Alan Hynek. I remember walking down the street with him one time at the height of his fame, and people would stop him on the street and want to talk to him and ask him questions. But I think that's as famous as any ufologist ever gotten. And I think that only a small number of people even remember Alan, and fewer remember Keyhoe. You'd have to be a ufologist with a historical memory to recall Donald Keyhoe.
Or very old.
Sadly.
Or both, all those things.
Well, he hung out, I think, till his 90s. So speaking of being very old, he died in the 1980s or something like that. So I don't know his condition towards the end of his life, but I did talk to him in the mid-70s. I interviewed him a couple of times, and he seemed to be alert and pretty well. Of course, nowadays, 85 is the new 65.
And I met him once at a MUFON conference in 1978. And my impression was that he wasn't that interested in UFOs anymore. He didn't really have too much to say. And when he spoke, it was all really stuff out of his books that he wrote in the 50s. You know, he'd done what he wanted to do, and he could go on to something else. But I was a little disappointed. I was, even then, a little in awe that I was talking with Donald Kehoe. But he just turned out to be an ordinary man. So much for a hero of my childhood.
Some of these people that are seeking fame, and I guess the faces of ufology today are horrendous to us, Eric Von Daniken and Giorgio Tsoulikas. If you ask the average person, those would be the names that they would come up with. And
I don't think that Von Daniken is a ufologist. He never really embraced ufology, and ufology never embraced him. He would always say that he wasn't against UFOs or anything like that. It just wasn't what he was interested in.
The line is blurred, I think, in the public's eye due to the popularity of the television show. But I wanted to ask you something. While we were talking about fame, so you've worked with a number of researchers who are not so interested in the spotlight. And is this historical group still active? And can you tell us something about that?
Beginning in the 1990s, there got to be a lot of formal interest in the history of the subject. And my encyclopedia was kind of part of that wave. Some of us got really interested in reconstructing what had happened, not only the cases and the official projects and the organizations, but also just the social history. That's what was interesting to me, how these groups came to form, what theories they had, how they interacted with each other, what they believed and didn't believe. That was really the part of my UFO encyclopedia, which was published in a number of volumes in the 1990s, that interested me the most, was just telling these stories. And other people got interested in other aspects. For example, some of the classic cases, poring over the official documents, doing all these things to really reconstruct as clear a picture as we could get of what happened since 1947. And then when the Internet came along and was possible to get access to newspaper archives, there was an explosion of interest in what happened before 1947, you know, not only with the great airship wave at the end of the 19th century, but all these things, these sightings of things in the sky, that some of which sounded like modern UFOs, some of which didn't. But there was just an enormous amount of research, and we have a much better understanding of what was happening before 1947.
So we're actively engaged here in an historical perspective of the UFO mystery, and we have a ways to go. More to come with Gene, Kurt, and Jerry. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
You haven't experienced yogurt until you've tried Amasi, embodying health and flavor in a true whole milk, green-fed dairy beverage. Every sip pays homage to our old-world cows and the ancient culturing methods their milk benefits from. With over 30 probiotics, Amasi's undeniably nutritious, refined, cultured sensation bolsters your health and awakens your passion for dairy. Amasi's so good, and you need to try it. Contact your Youngevity distributor or call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com.
Hello, my name is Marjorie Wildcraft. I'm the founder of the Grow Network, which is an online community of people who produce their own food and medicine. We are really into backyard self-reliance. If you want this lifestyle, I suggest your first step be to learn some basic home medicine. Just the other day, my 18-year-old son came to me and said, "Mama, I got a sore throat. Can you fix me up?" And I said, "Sure, Ryan," and in about 24 hours, he was better. The best home medicine for you to start out with is garlic. It's an amazing natural antibiotic, and I can show you how to use garlic to handle ear infections, sore throats, colds, and flus. As a way for you to get to know a little bit more about me and the Grow Network, I've written up an easy introduction on how to use garlic. It's at gcnwellness.com. Now, the station manager told me that I needed to say the URL at least twice, even though it feels kind of weird. But if you're interested in backyard self-reliance, you are one of us. Go to www.gcnwellness.com and let's connect up.
Message and data rates may apply.
You don't follow the herd. You blaze your own trail. And you're as adventurous in the kitchen as you are in life. Whether it's paddleboard yoga or Peruvian steak, you're the first to try new things. So are we. We're Green Chef, the first USDA-certified organic meal kit delivery service. We offer delicious meal plans for 7 different lifestyles. Paleo, gluten-free, keto, vegetarian, vegan, carnivore, and omnivore. Want to be the first of your friends to try Green Chef? Discover our exclusive introductory deal by texting the keyword FUN66 to 543-543. We believe that cooking, just like life, should be all about experience and flavor. And by exploring dinner options with Green Chef, you'll try new recipes, techniques, and ingredients for bold, new restaurant-level flavors. It's like enjoying a new cooking class, but in your own home. To experience this culinary adventure, text now and discover our exclusive introductory deal. Text FUN66 to 543-543. That's FUN66 to 543-543.
Here's a special message for those of you who owe the IRS at least $10,000 or more in back taxes. The IRS has special programs in place that could eliminate or reduce your tax debt by thousands of dollars. Call the Federal Tax Management Helpline that has been set up for you, 800-503-8625. Stop the wage garnishments, levies, and tax liens now. Once you've qualified and enrolled, the IRS will stop all the collection activities against you. These unique programs have been allocated to help the economy and significantly reduce or eliminate your tax burden. The IRS is currently accepting reduced settlements and other favorable programs. You may qualify for substantial savings, so get the help you need. If you owe more than $10,000 in taxes, call for free information and to see if you qualify. Take down the number now for the Federal Tax Management Hotline, 800-503-8625. That's 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Hi, this is James Fox from Chasing UFOs. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we continue here, but first, before we go on, we have a second radio show called After the Paracast, which is just what it implies, or more of the Paracast, because sometimes that's what it is, a continuation of the regular show. And it's only available if you subscribe to the Paracast Plus. Go to plus.theparacast.com for more information. plus.theparacast.com. You also get a version of this show with better quality audio free of the network ads. So people on YouTube who say, ads, 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 he has an ad every minute. That's one person, some really wacky person on YouTube. Why is he having one ad every minute? Of course, he doesn't. The actual duration of the show between ads is from 8 minutes and 50 seconds to 10 minutes and 40 seconds, because I have my log here, and it confirms what I'm saying is true. Plus, paracast.com. And we're talking here about the historical perspective of UFOs, and that's a lot of what Jacques Vallée has been doing these years, focusing on historic events as opposed to current stuff, or maybe current stuff disgusts him because it never seems to go anywhere.
Well, you get that feeling sometimes. I sort of think that we know by now, if we know nothing else, what UFOs do and what they don't do. So we're not waiting, for example, for a landing on the White House lawn, which we actually kind of were back in the early days, and there was no reason not to be waiting for that because we didn't know what was possible. We thought that might be possible.
Yeah, but what would happen is we expected Klaatu to come out of a flying saucer. Because that is the image of landing in a park near the White House, and he comes out wearing his silvery uniform.
Yeah, I think the Navy stood still, either played on that idea or encouraged it. But if we do know what UFOs do and what they don't do, there's nothing surprising. Sightings get kind of boring after a while, and I think that's true of almost any anomalies. They have a limited repertoire, and you realize at some point that, okay, you're going to get so much out of it, and you're not going to get other stuff that you're looking for out of it. It's just going to, in its own way, just repeat itself. And at a certain point, if you're, you know, if you can run out of patience, or if you're intelligent and curious, you began thinking in terms not of a whole bunch of random strange stories, but you look for patterns and you try to create hypotheses out of what you can demonstrate to some reasonable degree is going on. And that's kind of where I've gone over the years. Yeah, just the usual sightings aren't terribly interesting to me because I've read some version of them or heard some version of them all before and many times before. But what does it mean? How does this work? Even if you can't explain it, you can at least figure out to some extent how it works. And once you've discerned how it works, then you can start making hypotheses about the phenomenon. I'm talking about kind of the arc of my own intellectual engagement with ufology and anomalies generally.
Well, the thing here is once you have a few sightings, you pretty much know a good deal about what's going on. And if you take a copy of the book Flying Saucers from Outer Space from Major Donald Kehoe, add to that something about abductions, for example, and you basically have the entire field summarized. And most of the rest of the books you read are just compendiums of sightings. In fact, going back to Jim Moseley, he would always write summaries of sightings, and I did too when I worked for the magazine, from newspapers. We just rewrite them and credit the newspaper as the source. And then he would tell me every so often, you know, I'm really sick and tired of these sightings. I'm just doing it because our readers want to read about it. He basically had enough in the 60s because most of what is still going on had already occurred.
I think that there was some shift in the way people experienced UFOs beginning in the 1960s. In the 1960s, there were these stranger and stranger stories. Alan Hynek coined the phrase high strangeness. And there may be just a fundamental difference between, say, your landing trace case, your radar visual, and the sorts of cases that involve just really extraordinary claims that are not verifiable, even if you have a witness who is sane and sincere and probably experienced something such as he explained. But I began to wonder at a certain point whether, you know, the abduction phenomenon was even related except by appearances to the, you know, the daylight disk phenomenon. The daylight disk phenomenon is where the extraterrestrial hypothesis begins, because daylight disks are, you know, logically thought to be extraterrestrial spaceships. And they show up on radar. They give evidence of some kind of advanced technology, all these things you would expect of a technology-based visiting alien intelligence. But what do you do with Men in Black and abductions and things like this? Just these the otherworldly journeys, all these things that get wilder and crazier as time goes on, and yet yield no evidence comparable to radar visual evidence or the sort of hardcore evidence that you can get out of close encounters of the second kind than radar visuals. You know, it's something fundamentally different going on, and that is one of the conclusions I eventually arrived at. I was close to Bud Hopkins, who was a good friend of mine. I loved the guy. But eventually we just came to see the abduction phenomenon very differently. Bud believed that it was a logical extension of the extraterrestrial hypothesis and that, in fact, it was revealing why the aliens had come to visit the Earth to start with. And I did not draw that conclusion at all. Eventually, I just completely distanced myself from it.
Well, the thing I see with that is if there is a logical reason for them to abduct Earthlings, how many times do you have to do it before you've accomplished that task? If it's a genetic thing, you don't need to do invasive things to take a DNA sample. And certainly some civilization with amazing medical technology could probably do everything on a few samples of the local populace, and not even touch them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. At a certain point, it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, these seem to be real experiences. People are their experience vividly. They're not just like dreams. They're really extraordinary, terrifying experiences. But they're probably not what they seem to be. They may be related to, a much older tradition of supernatural kidnappings, where people are taken by otherworldly entities of various identities, usually identities that make sense in the context of cultural expectation and belief, and subjected to frightening indignities of various kinds. I think that these things are real, they're extraordinary, they're culture-bound, and they take on the coloration of a society's idea of what a supernatural kidnapping, an otherworldly kidnapping, would be like. Just playing out with UFO coloration this time.
Well, the thing you mentioned here, of course, is the interaction with some kind of outside force. Now, when we had David Halperin on the Paracast a couple of weeks back, and for the first half of the show, we had Eric von Daniken. And I'll ask you about ancient astronauts, though I get the sense here that those stories may be based on similar experiences. But in any case, he said Barney Hill was recalling the nightmare, kind of a racial memory, the nightmare of the African-American slave experience, being kidnapped in Africa, brought here by these evil people who were using them as human cargo.
Yeah,
and that was something that he was recalling, and maybe he was recalling what his parents had told him or his grandparents about their history. Let's get to that in a moment. We've got Jerome Clark, Kurt Collins, Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free Reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready to eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and serve. Life-saving, ready to eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Let's continue with what I said about David Halperin and his perceptions about Barney Hill. What do you think, Jerry?
Yeah, I don't buy it. I mean, no disrespect to David, who is a wonderful guy and a lifelong friend. And I like David, and he's a very smart guy. But this is really a simplistic and reductionist explanation. These racial dramas do not play out in the very numerous abduction narratives that we have, in which the Hill experience is very typical. There's nothing extraordinary about the Hill case, except that it was the first one that became widely known. Even the missing time aspect of it goes back into the 18th and 19th century in supernatural kidnap stories where no one was imagining aliens or anything like that. I think there's a tendency among academic skeptics, and that would describe David, to make extraordinary experiences as small as we are, that they have to be contained within existing knowledge or we can't talk about them. And I think that one thing we know about these experiences, they are not contained within existing knowledge. I think we're right to be skeptical about their content, but I don't think we're right to be skeptical about their extraordinary nature, that we're dealing with something that is beyond current knowledge and it may be way beyond current knowledge. But it isn't reducible to some kind of reductionist formula. I'm just surprised that David would suggest that. That to me is kind of a non-starter as an explanation. The Hills had a very typical, what we came to know as a typical abduction experience. And there was nothing unusual about it, except for the social fact that it was an interracial couple, which from everything I can see, since most couples who undergo abduction experiences aren't interracial, most of the stories we have are from white people. Actually, that may just be an artifact of reporting. I just don't think that you can reduce it to something like that. It seems puzzling to me that David would think that he had somehow solved this. That just seems to me like kind of inspired guesswork.
You mentioned a number of things as the conversation went along that were each worthy of closer examination. And one thing I wanted to mention was the artifact reporting. And you were talking about daylight discs earlier, and I think it's worth mentioning that the fact that these weren't lights in the sky. This was something seen in the air during daylight by a pilot who was experienced and reputable. You know, that was what made the flying saucer sightings newsworthy to begin with, and other pilots saw them. So this was different than some of the later sightings that sort of capitalized on it, where they saw a saucer. And the other thing I wanted to bring up that you had mentioned was the supernatural aspect. And I wanted to ask you if some of these other ideas, whether they're abductions or crop circles or even there were pitted windshields in the 50s that people were connecting with flying saucers. Well, I guess I'm asking based on my own bias here. I think these other elements being brought in with UFOs sort of diminish each of them, even if they are individually worthy of study. I think they suffer by being lumped together.
I agree with you. Yes, I think that's true. I think that in the 1960s, late 1950s, 1960s, NICAP was extremely conservative about what it accepted as UFO data. And it got no end of criticism for that. And I'm sure that the young Jerome Clark was just as vocal as anybody about that. But in retrospect, I begin to understand NICAP's point of view. It was always claimed that NICAP was concerned about respectability more than anything else. Well, certainly NICAP was concerned about respectability. It wanted to be heard, and it wanted influential people to hear it so that influential people with power could generate real UFO investigation and financing for it. But I think that NICAP was right to insist that the real evidence was in the radar visual cases, the multi-witness cases, the physical trace cases, those kinds of things that suggested, you know, a technology, something that was ultimately verifiable, evidence from which you could learn. You could take it into a laboratory. You could study it scientifically. That was the real data. If you were talking about the possibility that the Earth was under visitation from another civilization, that's where the evidence was. And all the other stuff was just noise. You can criticize NICAP in individual cases and so on. But I think that the general point was right, that when you study UFO data, you first of all have to define what the data are. Do you think that anything that somebody says that has something like a flying saucer in it is a UFO case, is UFO data? If you look at this critically, I think that presumption begins to break down. And we really are dealing with different things that we've just thrown together as UFO data. I think the UFO data probably are exactly what they first were thought to be, the hard evidence cases by pilots and people like that, scientists, astronomers. And that's where you look if you're looking for proof of a technical anomaly. But you can collect as many abduction stories or Men in Black stories or otherworldly journeys as you want, and all you're going to get are a bunch of stories. Most of these stories will be by people who appear to be sincere and sane, but they won't get you anywhere. And the stories don't even really cohere in the way you would expect them to do if they were an objective phenomenon. So maybe NICAP had a point after all.
There was an article in Saucer News, by the way, which was roughly titled, "How Close Will Major Kehoe Allow a UFO to Get?" And that kind of follows what you just said, which is that they tended to downplay anything related to a contact, and certainly it took them a while to even get into coverage of Betty and Barney Hill. So that was one of the issues. But I wanted to shoot back to a couple of other subjects before we get to 1897 and some new material you've written for Fortean Times. Since we had Eric von Daniken on a couple of weeks ago on the Paracast for the first time, although we've discussed his main topic before, ancient aliens, what's your perception of that? Are they telling of experiences, contact-related experiences, in the terms of ancient man that are similar to episodes of possible contact with aliens now?
Not in the way that von Daniken writes about it. You know, I think that people have always had extraordinary experiences. I mean, that's just part of being human. And any place you look in human history, whatever tribe or group or nation or whatever, they've had what we generally call anomalous or supernatural experiences. And I think that it's just wise not to, what's the word I'm looking for? Not to just try to cram them all into a box, because they're not going to fit into one box.
I think David Halperin, in his discussion, because he obviously is a biblical scholar and he was dissecting a lot of what von Däniken said, is that he was reaching. Then obviously some of those older texts can have different meanings depending on the translation you read or whether you try to attach certain terminology to modern terminology. So in this case, he was reaching, and he came up with a theory that maybe he thought was original, but of course it was fairly old news in the UFO field.
Well, David is one of the people who are qualified to judge what these narratives are about. I mean, there's a real sophisticated study of the ancient world, and it is not represented in von Däniken's work. And if you want to know about the ancient world, what was going on there and what people believed and how they saw the world, it's scholars like David Halperin you want to turn to. Not von Däniken, who's just kind of a hobbyist. I call these people barstool ranters, although I think that von Däniken, in my experience, is not a ranter. He's a soft-spoken, pleasant man. But nonetheless, it's kind of making it up as you go along.
And kind of at the end of the segment, he was admitting, well, this is my interpretation of it, and he really had nothing more to offer than that. Again, it goes back to that. This is how I look at it, and fine. But as you say, he's a gentleman, very nice guy, and I enjoy the session. We've got more to come with Jerome Clark and Kurt Collins. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hear that? That's the sound of a house being trashed while a gang of thieves ransack the place. And what they don't steal will be destroyed.
This year, resolve not to be the next victim of a break-in. Go to FakeTV.com and discover a device that creates the illusion someone inside is watching TV, even when you're miles away. Security is a mindset, and Fake TV should be part of your security solution. Be vigilant, but not fearful. FakeTV.com.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original and most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.